A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there. Welcome to the Square Ball Podcast number 165 with Levi's Solicitors, with 10% off your legal fees when you mention the Square Ball. levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan Moylan, and with me is Michael Normanton.
Hello.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
Issue 5 is our current issue of our fanzine, which came out for the Wednesday game. More copies of that on sale. Next home game at Elland Road. Loads of clobber as well. Clothes, mugs on sale via our website, which is thesquareball.net. And that is the place if you want to get your half-season subscription. Get all the remaining issues of the magazine delivered to your door. Well, it all got a little bit frenetic, wild, crazy at the match ball at the weekend because of the QPR game. How do you feel now?
People have said we sounded, you in particular, sounded angry, Dan. I can't really remember.
Yeah, I was quite angry. I was more bemused than angry, I think, at the weekend. Just kind of, when Leeds totally leads it in like that, when everything goes wrong and the world feels like it's caving in, it stops making sense. I kind of tolerate it up to a point, and then head just goes. And it went on Saturday. I've gathered my thoughts together now and I'm fine with it, but it wasn't great, was it?
The implosions weren't as bad when it just meant we had a really bad result and we went from 12th to 15th. You could laugh at it then. That joke isn't funny anymore, as the song goes. It's a bit upsetting, really, that we've just been looking ahead to Millwall, you know, looking at teams like that now. 8 points off us, who at the start of this bad run seemed like they were potentially going down. If anything, we were probably going to win the league, finish 30 points ahead of them. It's all just bunched up so horribly behind us, you start worrying about dropping out of the playoffs.
I mean, you tried to inject a note of optimism at the weekend, Moscow. I think you could probably get away with it now more. We've had a couple of days to process everything. How do you feel about it?
Probably the same. There did seem to be a collective loss of minds about this game. For I'm not sure why, for any particular reason. It wasn't like we played any worse than we have in any other matches or did anything particularly different. I've seen there was quite a strong movement against some of the defence, that, you know, Liam Cooper should be bombed out of this team. But, you know, if Naki Wells hadn't cheated, we keep a clean sheet. And, you know, QPR, they obviously have a dangerous forward line. Lots of the things that we don't like players running at our defenders that they never particularly appreciate. And we didn't let them score. And we barely let them have a chance in the second half. It's absolutely standard that we dominated the match, unlucky goal against, and then we lose. And if we had a striker, we win that game. So that's all we need. Sign a striker, we'll be all right. We'll go up.
In amongst all the hysteria, we didn't really give proper credit to their forward line, which does look dangerous.
Well, they didn't do anything. So there's no credit to have. They didn't score.
No, but even still, I mean, it is a forward line that we've come up against that's probably given us one of the most troubles, I think. And even then, we still kept a clean sheet, bar cheating.
Yeah, so there's a temptation. I think there was a desire on Saturday afternoon and evening to tear the team to shreds. I think they phoned up 606 to say it's time for Bielsa to go and we need to get Mick McCarthy in to get this team over the line. All that kind of nonsense. And it is as simple as score goals. And to score goals, we just need to sign a striker. So we'll sign a striker of any kind and then we'll get promoted. So it'll be fine. And we'll look back on this and laugh.
Good.
While Pat Bamford just sits in the corner and watches.
I mean, this is turning into almost, you know, Michael, you've been laying out your coaching guides across, you know, recent weeks and months. This, maybe you could extend this into a management guide, how to run a football club, sort of along the lines of get some players.
And buy someone who has scored goals.
And get promoted.
I don't even care who anymore, just someone. It can be anyone at all. I don't care what sort of striker they are. I don't care if they're slow, if they're fast, tall, short. Just get someone on who can score. At least two can give us an option, because that's what this game was crying out for. Because Bamford, he does have these sometimes. He was having a bad game. He'd missed. I know there was the massive Twitter debate about whether his chance was more than 0.03 of an XG, which it definitely was, and the penalty definitely was more than that. You just needed to go off. Just sometimes you're just having a bad day and you need someone to just say, look, let's let someone else have a go. Even if that person is, you know, Dukara. Someone who everyone basically acknowledges isn't that good, but who is at least somebody different who can have a go.
We do create enough chances for any striker should look good in this team. And, you know, Bielsa's whole raison d'etre and everything he's done at Leeds has been about making average players look much better. It just seems like Pat Bamford is his... Well, finishing is the one thing Bielsa says he can't teach, so Bamford is kind of immune. But you would think the number of times we cross a ball into a box and the number of times he's allowed to put the ball down on a penalty spot and kick it, that he might get a few more goals than he has. And there's a mixture of responsibility. One, obviously, it's on the club for not having secured another striker by now, or for having to deal with Nketiah where he could go back halfway during the season. But then, I suppose, under what other circumstances we could have got a £20 million rated striker other than some kind of deal that was designed to screw us in the end? I don't know. But you've also got to look at Bamford and say, just score some fucking goals. Yeah. Like, it's not... He was Championship Player of the Year not so long ago, and he's had nothing but support for him from the terraces during games. You know, even when Nketiah was here and Eddie got chanted, there would be chance for Bamford as well. He would be sung off and Eddie would be sung on, and it would all... There's nothing but sort of... there's criticism on social media and on podcasts like this when, you know, you'd hope he isn't listening or paying attention. So it's fine when there is attention. He gets everything he needs, and I don't know what more he needs to actually just score some fucking goals. He's not the only one, because Jackie missed his header at the back post. But there's just, when you're multi-million pound number nine is putting the ball down on the penalty spot and nobody thinks he's going to score, just bomb him out and get somebody else in.
What was your next word going to be there?
I know it's a hassle for you to have to bleep things, so I try to avoid it.
Okay. I do wonder if strikers see our play, like, you know, we're on telly enough where you think someone like Andre Gray or Shea Adams has gone, do you know what, bloody hell, I'd love to play in that side because they make so many chances.
You would hope so. It's a bit like the thing of... In the old days when Scum signed Andy Cole, everyone agreed he was basically not very good, but then he still scored like 25 goals every season because they were the best team in the league and used to just put endless chances on a plate for him. We should be that, but somehow Bamford is still not the top scorer in the division despite the fact he has more chances than pretty much everybody else.
I know we'll be talking about transfers in a little bit, but it does seem like that's the message that's got through to Shea Adams, where, yeah, he wants to come to Leeds and score loads of goals for Leeds, like he's up for the move. And that's probably part of it. And I think the other side of it, when you do wonder about what's affecting the rest of the team, because there are bigger problems than just not scoring. Everything looks flat. Some of the players look tired. We are still... I mean, this should have been a clean sheet, but for cheating. Sheffield Wednesday could have been another 0-0 if Kiko had saved that one at the near post. And then if it was 0-0, the second one doesn't happen. So those mistakes are creeping in, or at least that mistake is creeping in when it wasn't before. And as much as strikers are looking at our team and thinking there's an opportunity there to go to Leeds and score goals, defenders will be looking at our team and saying, oh, if we're playing Leeds on the side, there'll be loads of crosses, but they won't score them. And it's just, I've mentioned in my match report, it's going back to the 50s, but the whole question of where Leeds should have played John Charles in defence, is he because he started as a centre-half, or... up front, because when he went up front, he started scoring loads of goals. And in the end, the best place for him was in attack, because although the defenders we had, he was the best defender at the club. But if he scored three goals in the first half, then our defenders' lives were easy. And every team came to play Leeds, and the first thing they had to do was try and stop John Charles scoring. Whereas if he was in defence, they could target the players around him and they'd feel like they had more of a chance.
Are you saying we should play Bamford at centre-half? Is that why...
Or Ben White up front.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm saying we need a...
I think either would probably be quite good, actually, because Bamford's good defensively.
When we look at the the problems, why is everything a bit flat and why has some of the fizz has gone out of this? I think it's just that feeling that no matter if you're Jackie Harrison or Helder Costa, yes, you could improve your own final ball, but then you're also thinking you could put the perfect cross into the box and it's still not going in. Whereas if you have a player there that everybody has the confidence that they're going to score goals, then the defence are more relaxed and everybody and the wingers are more optimistic about the balls that are coming in. The whole thing just lifts. So I do think there's, rather than sack Bielsa, get Eddie Gray in, play the kids, sell everybody, everyone's saying, you know, we need to sign a keeper, sign a centre-half, sign a new midfielder, maybe with injuries and suspensions, that's an option. But really, just somebody who can score. And we beat QPR.
Yeah, I think it's about something we touched on, I think, last week, is coming in with a fresh body, new ideas, somebody who's not carrying that millstone of Leeds United around their neck, somebody who can just come in and say, it's all right, lads, I've got this.
Yeah.
You keep sticking these chances in front of me and I'll do my best to put them away, and hasn't had half a season of anxiety piled on the shoulders.
Whereas if you're looking at Bamford flapping his arms around just because the ball was an inch away from his foot and he's offside anyway, then you go, fuck off.
You can kind of see why Patrick Bamford is at this level, and you can also see why he tends to score in fits and starts. I think he's a good footballer. I just don't think he's a very good striker, and certainly not one to lead the line on his own. And we've kind of, you know, swayed back and forth on this podcast on Bamford across the season, but we've seen enough of him now to know, I think, that this job up front on his own, he's not the man who's going to score us out of this division. And that, I think that applies even if he does score against Millwall twice or whatever. You see enough of his fallow patches now to think, we need something else up there. Maybe Bamford to play off him, Bamford to come off the bench, whatever it might be. I just don't see him leading the line. I just don't think he's quite got it.
He's technically a very good footballer. If you were to do like a series of tests on him against, say, like prime Becchio, Bamford's touch would be better. He's probably got a better leap on him. I'm sure he can do more kick-ups in the garden than Becchio. All the metrics on him would probably say he's a better footballer. But actually, put him in a game and Becchio's in the right place and scores goals.
There's a responsibility part of it as well with the whole penalty thing. Seemed like it summed him up, where he's never frightened of being the man, of saying, right, I'm going to take responsibility, I'll get that ball, I'll take that penalty. But then when he's left to actually do it, it's like he's terrified. There's that difference between having the self-confidence. A lot of people and the players that lead to who play with him and former managers say he has this real quiet self-confidence.
He's unflappable almost.
Yeah, he thinks he can. He always thinks he can do it. He'll always back himself to do it. But then I think that moment when he is actually with the ball on the penalty spot and there's the goalkeeper to beat, he just goes, oh, actually, I don't know, I can't. And he misses, because that penalty was atrocious. And it summed him up really, where it's kind of, he's got everything he needs, the skill set, the self-confidence, the belief, the ability to score a penalty like that and to take it on in a high-pressure situation. Because in that game, we were saying on Saturday that the way the Leeds were playing, the whole second half was, it was like the last few minutes of a cup final. From half-time onwards, we were desperately trying to equalise. There it is. There's the chance. He's the one who's going to do it. And then just there's that last little bit in between taking the responsibility and carrying it out, where he just seems like he fails far too often.
You do wonder if maybe he's just a bit too much of a thinker, rather than he's kind of got that kind of, I'm just going to shove this in the net, kind of that little X factor, that magic sprinkling, you know, that the great strikers have.
Thinks too much, but he ain't got a brain.
The thing with the penalty was, when you see it slowed down, he seems to be watching the goalkeeper to see where he's going to dive, but then just puts it to the same side as he's dived to. So you think, well, if you're gonna just pick a side, like Alan Shearer used to just pick a side, but then he just twatted it into the roof of the net or into the side netting and the keeper couldn't really get anywhere near it. Bamford seems to go for some middle ground here. It's like, I'll watch the keeper, where the keeper's going to go, but then I'll just hit it to this side anyway.
Was the goalkeeper said afterwards that his goalkeeper coach had done all the research on Bamford's penalties, so he knew exactly where it was going, so he just dived where Bamford always puts it. So you've probably got that thing of Bamford's watching the goalkeeper to see where he goes, and then he's going where he expects Bamford to put it, and Bamford was expecting to put it there, and then he just goes, oh no, and he's got no way of switching it up, so he's predictable and then doesn't have the nous to make a change. Or yeah, he sees the keeper going where he was going to put it, and instead of absolutely, because the keeper can dive the right way, but if you absolutely leather it past him, if you're Kevin Pressman, doesn't matter where he dives, but instead it's just, oh, no, he's dived. I was going to put it there. Oh, shit, I've missed it. And it's
foiled.
Just, yeah.
But you know that one-on-one chance that where he went through on the keeper? Do you wonder if maybe, again, he had another second or two to think about that? And that's maybe why that one didn't go in. Because
he didn't make good decisions, though. I mean, the thinker thing, he might be a thinker, but then it comes down to it. Does he then think of the, you know, you could be a thinker, you spend ages thinking about maths equations, for example, and then you still get the wrong answer. And it seems like he can do all the thinking he wants, and instinctively he does the wrong thing. And when he thinks he does wrong, because that's the second time we've seen him through on goal like that. And last time he tried to put it onto his weaker foot and got tackled. And then this time, I mean, it's not even about the decision, it's about the execution. There was another opportunity to just pause and go around the keeper and slot it in. But even if he just done a better job of doing what he decided to do, it goes in the net.
I mean, I think what I was getting at was, like, if anybody's ever played football, even to the shittest of shit levels, which is about where I go to, you know that, like, in those moments, you know, where you score the nice goal or whatever, even if it's five a side, playing with your mates or whatever, all that stuff happens instinctively. It's when you give yourself half a second to think, I think, maybe that's when things start to go wrong. And I do wonder if, like, on that one-on-one chance, that Bamford was already thinking in his mind what he was going to do. And by the time... by the time he'd thought it through, well, oh no, it's in the stand kind of thing. And again, similar with the penalty, rather than just running up, picking a side and smacking it in, thinking, right, I'm going to place it into that bottom corner there.
He is also absolutely useless with his right foot. We see this time and time again. He misses chances on his right foot all the time.
And yet he shoots with it as well.
Often quite badly as well. Like, there was one against Sheffield Wednesday, which was underrated for how good a chance it was, where it was just rolled across the box to him onto his right foot. Because it wasn't even one where he needed to particularly hit it hard, because the cross had some pace on it and he was about 6 yards out and he managed to get it about 5 yards over the bar. Stuff like that. He just needs to be better with it.
I think my solution with Bamford is not necessarily to bomb him out of the team, but to give him a bit of time out of the limelight and find a different place to play him. Because I just don't think he's a number
Southampton.
Nine.
Southampton. Swap him.
I think he's a good footballer, but I think he's maybe more built to be like an old-fashioned inside forward, or maybe to play off a striker or out wide, as he has done in his career previously.
Time machine, we send him back to the 1950s and he can play there.
That would work.
Quantum leap.
But do you know what I mean? He just doesn't seem to have the qualities of that number nine, that kind of that hunger, that killer instinct, whatever it might be, that little X factor.
Then he came on against West Brom and we were saying how he turned the game for us and had done really well. Obviously, he needs to be better, but it's partly the fault of us not having another striker, because he has a bad half and you take him off and that's fine. And hopefully we're sat here talking about a win or at least a draw, because whoever we've got on the bench has come on and scored and we can all just put it down to a bad day at the office for Bamford. But when it is all on him, it is an unfair amount of pressure on someone, because even the best strikers in the world have bad days. And I'm not saying that Bamford is the best striker in the world by any stretch.
Yeah, I think it's doubly frustrating that he decided, well, he didn't decide, but he missed that penalty and he had a bad game at this particular moment when we don't have a backup, and all the debate is about where our second striker is. Like, of all the times to fuck up that badly, he had to do it now. And yeah, I was going to say as well, sort of in his defence, he scored 10 goals this season. He scored a decent number of goals last season. But that's part of the infuriating thing as well. It's not impossible for him to be good. It does feel a little bit unfair, sort of turning the conversation about the entire game into just, what are we, like 10 minutes of just lambasting Pat Bamford. But
he embodies it, doesn't he, though?
Well, I don't think he just embodies it. I do think that is genuinely the problem, that when the ball is constantly being put in front of the striker and it's constantly not going into the net, it just filters through the back of the team where the nerves grow and we can't afford to make a mistake. In an ideal, we create enough that cheating goal that QPR scored, or the mistake by Kiko Kassir against Sheffield Wednesday, could be irrelevant, because we make enough chances to score goals, so it doesn't even matter. And I don't know, but part of it, I was reading little bits over the weekend, because obviously on Sunday, Liverpool beat Scum, and was it Mo Salah who completely miskicked it in the 6 yard box? It was a ball cut back and he was like, absolutely, and he just completely fluffed it, and it was very Bamford-esque. So he misses chances, and then Man City drew 2-2 with, was it Crystal Palace that they played? And I think the statistic on that was they put in 55 crosses or something ridiculous, and they ended up scoring from two of them. But if you're talking about conversion rates, I mean, even Leeds aren't that fucking bad. We only scored 2 out of 55.
The Bielsa legacy there.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But it is a feature not only of our team that we struggle with this, but even the best in the land do. There's anything to move on to is that last night we watched part of the hype, not the hype, but the hysteria about the QPR game is that feeling that it's only us and we're uniquely fucking this up, and it's a repeat of last season, which at times I feel like that's a bit of wish fulfillment. Like we're almost willing that to come through by
protect us from the actual glory.
And if we stopped comparing everything to last season, we might see that it's different. And then West Brom last night, you know, first 2 minutes, Dianga, whatever he's called, he did last a little bit longer than Pablo at Fulham, but eerily similar. And then their goal, like if you compare the goal we conceded to QPR to the goal West Brom conceded last night, absolute fucking shambles at the back for West Brom, that one. And then they attacked Stoke for the rest of the game and couldn't score, and they lost. And it makes the top of the division interesting.
It
gives us more of a chance, and it also, I think, it should serve as a reminder that we're not the only ones who are losing games. And in fact, I looked at the league table yesterday. We are still in the position, like the form lately, there's no getting away from the fact that we need to change the form, but we've won more games than any other team in the division, and goals scored. So Bamford is the problem scoring goals. We're fourth for goals scored, and the only reason QPR are third is because they put 11 past Wales. So there's still the traces of a very, very good football team underneath this bad, bad run, which, it's us and West Brom at bottom of the form table, which is... the whole division is bonkers. We are bonkers.
And you're right. What you touched on earlier is absolutely correct. And the word I was searching for that I couldn't find earlier, it's compounded. The whole misery, the anxiety, the frenetic response on Twitter, it's all compounded because it's January, because the transfer window's open, because the squad's thin, because we've got injuries.
Because we haven't signed anybody.
Yeah.
If we'd signed somebody on the 2nd of January, then we'd be much more relaxed. We'd probably have 6 more points.
I was going to say that we might be more relaxed because we were still 10 points clear of third.
But the beautiful thing is, and you know, we've spoken in the last couple of podcasts about it's hard for us to mess this one up. It still is. We're still
not that hard anymore.
Well, no, it's easier for us to mess it up, but we've still given ourselves a good chance by having that buffer to allow ourselves the bad run of form as long as we turn it around. And I refuse to believe that we can go into terminal decline. I just don't believe it. I think we've got games coming up that we will win. And all it'll take is new signing or two and a win against Millwall, and suddenly the world looks different because we could be top.
And Brentford were the team last week that were definitely going to take our place. They're going to win every game between now and the end of the season. Couldn't even score against Huddersfield. Against QPR, they looked brilliant. They looked like they could have been about 5 up by half time in that game. Huddersfield are shit. Couldn't score past them.
And QPR as well, we were talking about their attack. So yeah, they are third highest scorers in the division because they did 5 against Cardiff and 6 against Swansea or vice versa. And we kept them down to, I'm not counting that Naki Wells goal. Like so this team that is capable of sticking 5 or 6 past decent championship teams couldn't score past us. So that says something about how solid we still are. And I've not watched the second half back, but it was like so many other games where we're the only ones who look like scoring. And it was only that fucking cheating idiocy of the goal that we conceded that cost us. And Bamford, obviously.
We say thanks as always to Levi Solicitors for the support on the podcast. Get in touch with their conveyancing team if you're shifting house here in the new year. Loads of people moving in the new year. So if you are thinking of moving, get in touch with Levi's to look after your conveyancing. They are specialists. They've got loads of experience in the field as well. Accredited as part of the conveyancing quality scheme, which means they work to the highest levels of service. And we wouldn't be endorsing them if they didn't, would we? They will update you in plain English, completely transparent on their fees as well. You can get an instant conveyancing quote on their website, usual page, and then you can knock another 10% off as well because you're coming through us. Have a look at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Well, there have been more financial rumblings around Leeds United, which we'll get onto in a moment or two, but that is very much tied into the January transfer window. And as we sit here on Tuesday morning, it's 11 o'clock, still not signed anybody. Why haven't we signed anybody? What's going on? So having calmed everybody down in the last section, now we've got to start cranking up that hysteria again.
I'm worried about Aliyah Caprile as well. How are we going to go around about these under 23 games without a suitable backup?
He's just waiting for FA clearance.
Well, so they say. So they say. This is where we discover he's not Italian at all. He's got a Costa Rican passport and he's a 40-year-old man.
He's Raul Bravo's accomplice.
Nothing's been proven there yet. Yet.
Oh, I mean accomplice as in, you know, he carries his suitcases for him.
Bags and that.
Yeah.
I thought that's what you meant.
The bag's full of guns and money.
Shea Adams, seems like we're still clinging on by our fingertips to this one. We're not letting it go. We're being told no quite a lot. All the messages are saying no, but still, Shay, still love you. Don't leave me.
I think we're being... It's got beyond optimism now to hope that he still might come.
But you never know. It might just be that Southampton want that extra body in. Because I think a lot of what Hasenhüttl has been doing, which translates, by the way, we've got a translation on that. I think it's, is it Rabbit House?
Yes, thank you to everybody who sent that in. It's Rabbit Hutch.
Yeah, I like the idea of a rabbit house. Which, it sounds more grandiose than a hutch.
Whatever it is, it feels like that's where he wants to lock Shea Adams and and not let him come to Leeds.
Yeah, Hasenhüttl, it feels to me like he's saying, I don't want to lose him, don't want to lose him, but would probably be all right with losing him if I could get another forward in. That's the subtext there, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels that way. And the updates from everybody kind of watching it, from Phil Hay, from Graham Smith, is I think we need to sort of just remember that Leeds aren't as stupid as sometimes we think. I think if there was absolutely no chance, then they would walk away from this. And there will be, hopefully, a deadline on this that's well in advance of the window so that alternative arrangements can be made. But if somebody at Southampton is saying, look, we're gonna just sack that manager anyway and you can have him, there are some other things, kind of moving parts at Southampton where they've got a new sporting director who's due in. He's not actually started work yet, but he's kind of involved. And we were saying last week about them having their big January transfer planning window in the middle of the planning window, of the transfer window, sorry. So it is kind of, as we're saying, we've stumbled into that thing where other teams' problems become our problem. If it was as simple as a hard and fast no, or even a maybe that instinctively, like I think from outside, we all feel like, oh, like you said, that's not going to happen. Like way too optimistic. We need to give up. You just got to hope that they're acting on more concrete information than we are getting. Otherwise, Andre Gray would be here to finish the job he started in the 1996 League Cup final.
I think there is also a general, what's the word I'm after? It's not a misunderstanding, but perhaps we don't understand how transfers work in our fans' mind. It's a much more simple process as we view it as fans than perhaps the moving parts in the real world represent, because you've got a player who needs to be willing to come. There's a question there around wages. You've got to have a club that's willing to sell him. Are they looking to get a replacement? Like you say, the politics within that club. Is Hasenhüttl going to issue an ultimatum to his board? There's so many moving parts.
There's been talk of him putting in a transfer request, and then we're to...
Presumably there are financial implications for him if he does that as well, like not getting paid off, things like that.
And having to wait for them to have a meeting, and you're relying on, so they train in the morning. Okay, is Ralph and Shea going to get together in the afternoon? And then when does that get communicated back to the board? Aren't Southampton owned by people abroad? Andrea Ratrizzani might have fucked off to Qatar for a while. And so, you know, can we get hold of our chairman? So a lot has to happen. It's not as simple anymore as just like when Bill Fotherby would phone up Martin Edwards and say, can we have Dennis Irwin? And they'd say, no, can we have Eric Cantona? And he'd say, yes. Relatively simple days. And yeah, the days when you could just trade a player as a commodity, you know, he'd come into training one morning and say, right, we've loaned you to Leeds, get in a car, go. Now the player will bring his agent in and his entourage and his family will be weeping, saying they don't want to go north, and there'll be subclauses in his contract saying that, well, if they loan him against his will, then he's owed his back dates on his image rights for whatever. All this, it's a fucking nightmare. But at the same time, just fucking sign him.
Yeah, no, I agree. Get it done.
And I think the...
I want it all our way.
The cynicism from Leeds fans, it is justified. We've been looking at this for the extra ball that we're doing this week, looking back at previous January transfer windows, and they've basically all been a disaster. Like since signing Tony Yeboah in January, we've not signed anyone good in January ever. And mainly, while we've struggled to get good players in, we've not really struggled to get rid of our best players in January. We've done that on a few occasions. It would just be nice if once we didn't fuck this up.
I think that's the problem, isn't it? And Phil has used the phrase PTSD almost, like with regards to how Leeds fans view not only our promotion charge, but transfer windows you could add into the equation, couldn't you? And we've been scarred by previous events so many times that, like you say, you're now just, it's turned into a blind hope and a faith, and not helped by the documentary and Angus Kinnear saying we're not dicking around with the playoffs, dip in form and saying stupid stuff in the programme notes like we want to move early this window. Now, he did caveat that by saying, but only if the right player is available. But surely he knows how the transfer window works, and the fact that it always runs up close to deadline, that's just how it works, which frightens the life out of us as Leeds fans and is part of the problem. But still, don't say it. As we said before, just don't say it. Better to say nothing.
Yeah, I think the problem from their point of view is they did move early and then we just ran into Rabbit Hutch, and that's fucked everything up. And it is weird how different it could be that if Hugh Jenkins wasn't Swansea's chairman at the time, it would have been an absolute coup signing Dan James. That would have been an incredible, nobody knew who he was and we'd identified him, blah, 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 and it would have been incredible. And then if Rabbit Hutch hadn't just decided he's going to, actually, I've not played this player all season, but now he's the one I want to keep forever, we'd have got him in the first week and everything would have been absolutely fine. So you can understand why Victor Orta just slumps in his chair that way and looks, he's probably running through all that stuff as well. I bet what was going through his mind in that shot at the end of the game was Ralph fucking Rabbit Hutch over and over again, and probably visions of all the different kind of rabbit houses that are available from pet shops just haunting him. Those are the problems we have. And then there is an extra pressure as well with Orta's reputation, like that's all we have to go through every signing he's ever made now, as well as attaching that to this. And there's no, it's a little bit like Bamford up front to Leeds, where the defenders don't have the confidence that they're not going to have to keep a clean sheet, and we don't have the confidence that we're not going to get lumbered with Lawrence Dubok on January the 31st. So it really is time for them to step up and do something right.
Which also segues us seamlessly into the next point, which is finances as well. And because FFP or profit and sustainability regulations are now kicking in, because we're in that 3-year cycle, which is pinching Derby, which again we'll come on to in a bit, Sheffield Wednesday and so on and so forth. We don't have a direct example. We don't know for sure 100% how it's affecting Leeds. We just know it's there somewhere in the background. And there is a tendency to believe, oh, well, they're using it as an excuse. But it is another factor to think about this, about how we can spend, where we can spend it, what we actually need. Do the two things marry up? We need a good Premier League striker. Well, how are the finances going to work on that in relation to profit and sustainability?
Yeah, I mean, Watford's opening deal that they made public for Andre Gray, about whoever wants to loan him will have to pay, was it $1 million or $2 million up front? And then all of his £85,000 a week?
Between £70,000 and £85,000 seems to be the numbers.
And then you can just...
mental.
Yeah, and that's why you just go, you know what, we're out. And there's nothing you can do about that. That's, you know, there will be wiggle room on the FFP calculations, but not so much that Leeds can suddenly have £80,000 a week player on the books. It just, we're not in that situation. But that's what that's the player that we need, is a player from the Premier League who can score goals, because I'm sure we could go to Italy or Spain or Belgium and find a prospect who's much cheaper. Maybe go to Anderlecht and see what Kemar Roof would cost. like, we could do that. We could find a player that Victor Orta has identified on his transfer dating app websites and pay them a reasonable amount and bring them in, and they might actually be good. But we have to go for that market of the Shea Adams, the Andre Grays.
I've got more into the idea of Gray since reading a bit more about him. I didn't know a huge amount about his past, but if you look at any pictures,
son of Frank, nephew of Eddie, isn't he?
He's got like a 4-inch scar across his cheek because he was stabbed in the face.
In the what?
In the face. So, and he was like in gangs and stuff when he was younger. So I think him and Bamford together
could be the perfect combo.
I feel like they'll even each other out.
The original odd couple. Yeah, make them live together.
There's a movie there, isn't there?
There definitely is. They can room together. He can learn some streetwise tricks from Gray. Bamford can teach him to play the cello and whatnot. I think it's a dream. I think we're going to go 4-4-2 from the end of, to now in the end of the season, and it's going to be Gray and Bamford.
His record at this level is good, but the problem is, as we've discovered, if you have a good striker at this level like Chris Wood, then a bid comes in from the Premier League, and we couldn't afford to either keep Chris Wood or buy him back or even loan him back on the wages.
I've seen people suggesting that, saying, why don't we just go get Chris Wood back? It's like, he's playing in the Premier League, he'll be on a fortune. It's never going to happen.
The absolute, I don't know why it doesn't register often, but just the absolute gulf in wages just makes it an impossible situation, I feel like Nketiah's been done to death a little bit, but it is, at the time, and I think we spoke about it at the time, it was actually quite a clever way of getting a really, really expensive player for not much. I know we now say that we've spunked the loan fee and we don't get any money back, and that the recall clause means that we've ended up being fucked over, but the flip side of that is that there is no other way of financing to have that quality of player in your squad if you're in the Championship, unless you've got parachute payments. And so from that point of view, it's boxing clever in the summer. And it was a bit of a coup then to say, if the loan fee was £3 million and you get a season of a player who's worth 20 and affordable wages, then you've done really well. And it's been interesting to see Bielsa's agitated anger about Arsenal taking him back, which I think the fact that he keeps going on about it makes me think he thinks they've acted dishonourably. And that even if there was that recall clause to say, well, if you don't play him this often, we can have him back. I think his understanding was that they would be nice, generous people and say, all right, you've not played him enough first half of the season, but he was injured for a month. We understand that. And, you know, and Arteta is sitting there saying how much is the training and the experience at Leeds has improved him. So to that extent, they're very happy with what happened to Nketiah at Leeds. And so Bielsa's point of view is, so why not leave him with us the way you said you would? I suppose relying on there being any honour in football.
And change of manager's a thing there as well, whereas Arteta might say, well, I fancy having a look at him now. He's been off with Bielsa for a bit. Let's go see what he's like here. But anyway, let's move on to the financial side of things, because before the world caved in at QPR, there was a meeting between Ratrasani and a variety of moneyed characters, one of which was the guy from QSI, Nasser Al Khalifa, in a restaurant called Amazonico, one of those. And looks nice, doesn't it?
People say he's got no money. I'd look at the menu. £9 for yucca fritter.
What's that, sorry?
Yucca fritter. I think it's instead of chips.
Right.
£9 though for some chips.
Yucky chips.
So
doesn't sound great, to be honest.
One in the face for all those who say he's got no cash. Disappointing.
You're
though.
You're assuming he picked up the bill.
Like, that's true. Like a group of teenagers, the picture, they're all sat on the phones playing Angry Birds or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I like the assumption that they must be doing, you know, business.
High-level finance, and they're all playing Candy Crush. What have you got? Which level are you on? 247. Wow. I mean, something's got to be going on there. And we've seen rumblings in the background with the restructuring of Radrizzani's other companies, and Acer and Eleven are all, you know, the stuff. What's happening? For anybody who doesn't understand it or glazes over at the mere mention of finances, put it in simple terms for us.
I think Eleven Sports UK has been binned off as a failure. I think there was a movement on that to basically say that's shutting down. I think it is worth remembering sometimes Eleven Sports UK was a mess, but in, I think, Poland and
Portugal, I think it does okay, does it?
Yeah, it ticks over absolutely fine. They have the main rights to several leagues there and don't have any problems as far as I'm aware. And then Acer Group, Acer Investments, which is the sort of the company that owns Greenfield, which is the company that owns Leeds and Elland Road, and then also owns his other investment companies, 11 Sports, and there's various other ones. There's like a sports tech company that he started up under that. They have a facility now to borrow $40 million from an American investment facility called Corum Capital.
Does this mean we have to buy American players because it's in dollars?
Yeah, Robbie Rogers is behind the move. Him and Eddie Lewis have teamed up on this. They heard my comments about Roy Wegley at the weekend and are going to bring him in as a replacement for... No, that's all lies. We don't actually... There is no way of knowing from looking at the existence of this £40 million loan facility what it means.
It's $40 million, we should just stress. Yeah, it's about 30 million quid.
All we can say it means as is that Acer Investments as a group have access to $40 million of finance. So that could be $40 million is going to be thrown into Leeds United tomorrow and go out on Andre Gray the next day and we're not going to worry about FFP anymore. It could be that $1 million is going to come into Leeds tomorrow and we'll spend it on upgrading the turnstiles. It could be that nothing is coming into Leeds tomorrow and it's all going on. Maybe Acer are going to buy a new company that this is the investment for, or maybe one of the other companies, this sports tech thing that he's got. Maybe they're going to take $25 million because they're doing some research and development, or they're doing a product launch. Or maybe all his companies are losing so much money that this is a desperate bid that he needs a loan to bail them all out. There's nothing written down anywhere that says any more information about what this will do.
The more optimistic end of it, some people have been saying, is maybe this is a way of buying out, financing the 49ers out of it ahead of a sale to QSI. That's people putting two and two together, though, and seeing him in a restaurant with people, and he's obviously been in Doha and what have you. But there's no way of knowing what it is, just as there's no way of knowing what the money in your bank account is going to be spent on.
Yeah, I could tell you that I've just taken out a loan, and it means absolutely nothing without some...
I'll tell you what, if you ever do want to go down that rabbit hole, my God, about finding out how insurance works... I lost about a good half a day to that. I won't go into it now because this is a football podcast and it's a completely different discussion.
Something you could discuss with Levi solicitors, maybe, for a 10% discount.
It's wild how they do that, the whole insurance thing. Mental. Anyway.
Everything's bad. And the other thing to remember with the relationship with QSI and the people is that they're friends from long back. So the assumption is that their meal is a business meeting, but it could just be, London, because QPR are playing. Do you want to have dinner? Should we go out for tea?
Night in the West End. Go see a show.
Yeah, so it's we can only watch and guess and wonder, but certainly that...
Hope was the other one as well. There's a certain amount of hope attached to all this.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think there's a lot of different views on what we hope from QSI.
I mean, my general hope is that it's not going to knack a Leeds United and Leeds United will come out of it all right, no matter what that looks like.
That's my
hope. And not be Derby County, because I'd like to mention them quickly if we can, because they've got this charge from the EFL about the profit and sustainability rules. And of course, this will level the accusation that they're living rent-free in our heads. But no, it's pertinent and it's interesting because it's perhaps a model of what we don't want to do. Because they've got this charge hanging over them. Two-pronged is this charge. Number one is that they've overvalued the stadium, which, and I actually took a bit of time to look into their accounts for whatever reason. I had a look the other night. And yes, the stadium was there, listed the year before, valued at about, it looked to my mind, about 45 million quid, something like that, 40 million. And then the year after, it has been removed and listed as sold for 80 million. Mm. So there's a discrepancy there. In the previous set of accounts, it was done by, the evaluation was done by a company that Derby commissioned, but they seem to have sold it for a lot more than it's worth. That's what the charge relates to. Whether it's proven or not remains to be seen. But Tariq Panja, who writes for the New York Times, said that essentially the Football League allowed it through until they realised that Derby had done this sale valuation based on their own people, which, you know, it's like getting, Michael, could you value my car at £50,000, please, so I can sell it?
It was making a very odd noise when you drove up here before. Like, yeah. Michael commented on it, that it didn't sound very good. And now he's willing to, he reckons it's worth thousands.
That's right. And then the EFL have said, well, what we'll do is we'll send in our valuers and independent valuers, and they valued it a lot lower. So they're saying you've pulled a fast one. That's what the charge relates to. So we'll see if that one...
Yeah. And the reason Tariq Panja pulled that up is it's because Derby's response, their very angry response to, is that, and this is where the slither of Sean Harvey comes in, is that they say the matter was discussed extensively with the EFL and they agreed to all the arrangements, and that everything that Derby have done, they say the EFL was aware of and signed off on. And Tariq Panja's point is that PSG, funnily enough, our future...
friends?
Yes. Kissing cousins. They also had this problem with UEFA, whereas they presented the figures to UEFA and they said, yeah, that all looks fine. And then the actual figures turned up and UEFA went, actually, you know what? No, you
not
can't.
Fine.
Yeah, you can't do any of this. And yeah, and Derby's argument is that you don't get two goals, whereas I think the EFL's argument will be, yeah, but you don't just get to do it wrong.
It does make you realise that for the and the other stuff which we'll come on to, that for all of the fact there are these rules in place, it sounds like really the EFL needs a team of people working on this full time, actually looking through accounts properly, and then immediately going back to people going, well, there's this.
Yeah.
This looks a bit weird.
Well, they had that
the way you're doing this looks a bit unusual. That's not how most clubs do it. And actually bringing in proper standard accountancy procedures for stuff like this.
After Sean Harvey left, there was a job advert saying that they wanted some full-time accountancy expertise. I don't think it's because it had left with him. I think it's because he'd just been doing it himself. He's going, yeah, it looks fine. Yeah, Ken used to do stuff like that. That's no problem.
I'm happy to wave all this through.
The other issue then, the other prong of this particular set of charges relates to amortisation. And again, let's put this into really simple, straightforward terms for anybody who just finds all this stuff baffling. In essence, it's like if you sign a player who you sign for, like say, £4 million, what you then do is, if it's a four-year contract you sign them on, you write off £1 million a year. But that counts towards your losses. So you effectively lose £1 million a year on that player. However, what they're saying is Derby haven't done that. Instead of giving them a £4 million value, because that's what you bought them for, they're giving them like a residual value, aren't they, of let's say £2 million. So it minimises your losses.
Yeah, they just decide that the player will be worth a different amount to them. It's like saying, yeah, we paid £4 million for him, and I think they're arguing it around what the future transfer fee might be, and they're saying, yeah, we signed him for £4 million, but if we wanted to sell him, we'd only get £2 million. Mm-hmm. So instead of putting down £1 million a year on his four-year contract, we put down £500,000 a year on his four-year contract, and then we sail through FFP and lose in the playoff final.
It is a thing that you can do on certain assets, but footballers are not one of them. Because the wording of it is that it has to be like an active market for the asset from which residual value can be determined and which is probable. So if it's...
A car, for example, is
if you're selling a car or like a piece of machinery, like a printing press or something that's going to have some value, fine. If it's Richard Keogh, who might, at the end of his four-year contract, have a leg that's in eight pieces... Not worth so much.
But on the flip side of that, you might sign a young player who is finished in 4 years or might be worth 10 million quid, so you can't assign a value to them, can you?
And so there's two things to talk about, because some people have started questioning the legality of what Derby are doing, and I don't think there's any question that they're doing anything illegal, but we're talking about passing a test to be part of a sporting competition. So it's the profit and sustainability, the FFP test, is all about, are you playing by the EFL's rules? And it's accepted that it's accounting to zero, basically. As you say, we've signed this player for £4 million, and at the end of the contract, they're technically worth zero. So it's £1 million a year over their four-year contract. And then we sell it to the next club and they account it for the same way. They might sign him for £8 million, but then it's £2 million over the... And everybody's kind of agreed that's how that works. There's only Derby that we know about who are the ones who are going, actually, we'll do it differently because we get millions of pounds more to play with under the FFP rules. It's not about a tax scam. It's not about... accountancy regulations or getting it past HMRC. It's purely getting more money to play with under the EFL's FFP regulations. And I think if 23 teams in the league are all accounting the same way and Derby are doing something different that gives them an advantage, it's a sporting breach. And that's why there'll be a sporting sanction if it's all proven. And they're talking about 12-point deduction with 9 more points if it's deemed to be an aggravated breach, which, I mean, I don't see how you would argue that this is not, if this is proven, that's definitely a deliberate attempt to sidestep the rules everybody else is playing by and relegate the I was kind about the bleep machine before, but Derby, you've got me riled. Because it feels unfair to our club in general, because you see how irate Leeds fans get about the whole concept of FFP and why don't we just fuck it off and why are we the only ones who seem to play by the rules? And then you have the flip side of that, where there was Marcelo Bielsa in his press conference last week saying that Andrea Ratrizzani has built the perfect ethical sporting club until QSI turn up and unless they try to take him to Myanmar again, but where it's like they play by the rules and they are fair in this competition. And so it's about time that the clubs that we're looking at going, who were almost tempting us into fucking off FFP and just spending all the money, actually get punished for it. Because there should be, it's about time Leeds got some kind of credit for playing by the rules instead of QPR getting that goal that should never have been allowed, Millwall getting that penalty and Berardi sent off that they should never have had, Fulham, we didn't get the penalty down there that we should have had. There's three clear sporting decisions this season have gone against us. If they could just relegate 22 of the teams,
we'd be fine, wouldn't we?
Yeah, it would definitely help, or at least make it really visible that the clubs that have been causing this internal strife with us, where we're all questioning why do we have to play by the rules, punish the fuckers, and then we'll see that actually, yeah, it's probably a good job that we play by the rules and do not suffer for it. I think that's
you're right there. It would give more context to the way that Leeds is being run. You're right.
Yeah, because we don't see a benefit to being run fairly. And I think that's the short version of what I was trying to say, is we need to see the benefit of respecting these rules, and the benefit is that we don't get relegated.
It is the same as doping in athletics. If you can see that you're the only clean athlete and you're losing by a long way every time, then you eventually go...
Might as well shove some steroids in my eyeballs.
Might as well get a bit involved in some of these drugs. Everyone else seems to be doing it and winning, so there's no point me being here really otherwise.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, the booze baton are the destination for our end of season party. It's wide open again now. If you want to follow this and sort of play along, Eden J. Harris is the guy on Twitter who goes by the nickname of Garden. Be sure to say hi to him. Hi, Garden. He's tracking it for us. So start of the season, Leeds have possession of the booze baton, and then it changes hands through victory for another team. So we passed it on to Stoke, so on and so forth. And it is currently, or it was, beg your pardon, it was with Southampton. Shea Adams had secured it for us at Leicester, hadn't he?
It's another thing that Rabbit Hutch wasn't willing to let go, was it?
But they lost 3-2 to Wolves on Saturday, which it's created all sorts of wild possibilities for an overseas leg, a European split again, or possibly the West Midlands. Because they've got Liverpool, is it on Thursday?
And I think the conversation ends there, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then if Liverpool win, they then have got the possibility of losing it in Madrid, which would be quite interesting. Mm. And if Wolves beat them, then it can go to Espanyol, so Barcelona, which would be quite nice. And then if Wolves somehow get past both of them, they play Scum, and if Scum get it, then it could end up in Bruges.
It's worth pointing out Espanyol, very briefly, home to Marcelo Bielsa.
Yes.
He was there for a few months before he then unexpectedly got the Argentina job, so he didn't stay there very long. But that would be nice.
So loads of things. Or if Liverpool get it, it can then lose to Shrewsbury in the FA Cup. Go to Shrewsbury, which I don't entirely know where it is.
I mean, Telford's nice. Ironbridge, that neck of the woods, you know, down that way. Okay.
They've replaced Gay Meadow, haven't they, which used to have a hedge around it from memory. And I think it's one of those, it's a little bit like Craven Cottage in that there's a a river behind with a guy in a boat.
That's what I said. We've mentioned that on the pod before, haven't we? It was an old guy. He was about 105 when he was on Football Focus at some time years back. I know he passed away, that old fella, but nice way to spend your Saturday afternoon recovering balls from the river.
They've got rid of it, though. Closed in 2007, yeah. So actually quite a long time ago when it comes down to it. So moved to the New Meadow.
They released Andre Gray as a youngster as well.
Ah, so we're moving on from the Shea Adams derby to the Andre Gray derby.
In fairness, recovering your balls from the river could well happen on the boost baton as well.
Potentially.
As Michael mentioned earlier on this week's Extra Ball, if you fancy getting away from the doom and gloom of this January transfer window, pick up loads of new, exciting, glorious, happy information on the Extra Ball, our weekly subscription podcast, extra stuff every week. And this week we're looking back at other business we've done in the January window. For example, selling Johnny Woodgate, swapping Becchio for Morrison, signing Anthony Elding, and so much great stuff that you might want to reminisce about. And subscribing to the Extra Ball means you're getting behind us and the chance to win the greatest mug ever cast every single week. It's at thesquareball.net/TheExtraBall. I mean, Millwall, we've got another podcast to come between now and then, so I guess we could split our Millwall hot chat over the two, but they're in form. Gary Rowett's there now, isn't he? They're seventh. How have they got to seventh? What's going on there?
They've lost one in 13. That's how they've got there, and I don't understand it and I don't like it, but I can only conclude that Matt Smith is the difference maker.
You were showing me a picture earlier of Matt Smith's crumpled face.
Yes, he was punched in the face.
In the face.
And really, nobody's nose should be going to the place where... there's a brilliant photo that captures the moment, and nobody's nose should be going to the place where Matt Smith's nose has gone. Unfortunately for him, the referee was more interested in some porcine lust than in actually awarding a penalty for this, so he didn't get anything, and Matthew did. He put that photo out on Twitter himself, laughing, saying...
No penalty, not he said, didn't he?
Penalty? No.
Mais non, penalty.
I mean, have you seen the picture? Have a look.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah. Give him a right clatter.
Absolutely crazy.
He is listed on their website when I was Googling around for Millwall, on their website, as his full Sunday name, which is Mathieu.
Mathieu, I imagine his mother insists on it these days. When we're talking about, obviously, he's being brought off the bench for them quite a lot, very much. He is the championship Shea Adams. He's now got 7 goals and 4 assists in 12 starts and 12 sub-appearances. And he's played 12 minutes, 1,212 minutes, a goal every 173 minutes, and Pat Bamford is now a goal every 209 minutes. And if we need somebody to be big and strong and causing trouble outside the box to help the team create chances and then to get in the box and finish off the crosses that Jackie Harrison is aiming 10 feet in the air above the penalty spot, here's the player to do it.
If ever there was a game we should win, and I know they're in great form, if ever there's a game we should win, it's Millwall at home on a Tuesday night, because they're going to have played Sheffield United and gone hell for leather on the Saturday in the FA Cup. And then they're pretty much going to have to then journey up to Leeds after, what, a day off? Journey up to Leeds. Mm. They're going to have no turnaround time. We've got 10 days to get our shit together, sign somebody new, also to get fired up about Tom Bradshaw, the diving prick.
Sign their best player.
Yeah.
So we take him.
But this is the game we absolutely could, should, and need to win.
Feels to me like we've got a long time to fret over this one. Overprepared. We'll be planning for it for a full 8 days now, just watching the videos, getting the shape right in training.
That's right. You go down that side, Helder, you cut it back, and yep, and that's where they'll boot it out from the 6-yard box time and time and time again.
It is sometimes better not to have the, especially during a transfer window. I do sometimes think playing the next game straight after the one before is better, even if we just have to play all through the night. I don't want to be in Elland Road if we lose this.
No, I don't think we'll lose it. We won't lose it.
If Luke Ayling, if Bill could just let me know before the match whether we're going to win or not, and then if he says, no, we're going to lose, I won't go, like, if that could be arranged.
We'll not do the match ball either, because it's getting a bit...
Half an hour of crying.
It's getting a bit hard now, isn't it? Now we're losing all the time. They were good fun earlier in the season when we came in and just laughed about how far clear we were at the top of the league.
But when we resume that form and we put that distance back in place, that gap to third place in a few weeks, then we'll be able to go, weren't we frenetic a few weeks ago? Weren't we really upset?
We owe these for Tom Bradshaw, for everything.
And they have someone called Billy Mitchell, in the team, which seems a step too far to being Cockney stereotypes.
Caricature, isn't
it? And they also have Sean Williams, which is very near to Sean Williamson, who is Barry from EastEnders. So they've basically got two EastEnders characters in their squad now.
And they're only good players, Matthew Smith, as we've discussed, and then there's Jed Wallace, the youngest Wallace brother, who's always pretty decent. But apart from that, I suppose tribute to Gary Rowett that he's managed to get this shower of shit up to seventh. With what looks like a bit of a change in playing style, whoscored.com tell me that obviously they are very strong at aerial duels because Matt Smith can come on and do that. And at creating chances through individual skill is a strength of theirs, which is unexpected, but not as unexpected as their style of play being playing with width and non-aggressive.
Doesn't seem to tally up with the evidence.
You know, Barcelona recently sacked their manager because even though they're top of the league, he's not playing the Barcelona way. Do you think Gary Rowett is going to get them to the top of the championship, but with a non-aggressive side, probably fill them with all kinds of players from very diverse multicultural backgrounds, and the supporters are just going to say, you pushed your luck with that French striker that we forced you to sell to Leeds in January, but this is too far. There were three passes in that match completed and they were under 15 yards. Sacked. Get out of our club.
Bring back Dennis Wise.
He knows the club and he's got to play the Millwall way, hasn't he? So,
are we concerned about them being very strong at aerial duels and strong at attacking set pieces?
No.
Well, it's all just Matt Smith, isn't it?
They won't get any.
It's both ends. He, as his resemblance to John Charles is not only physical, but playing style as well. Good in both boxes. I mean, we piss around with Pat Bamford trying to defend corners. Imagine Matt Smith in our box. Ben White could just stand over with Kiko.
They won't get any chance.
Smoking a cigarette.
It's fine.
Dan, given how confident you are at this game, can you remind me what your predictions were for the QPR game?
I think against Millwall, what we will do is we will sign up.
I didn't ask that. I said, what were your predictions for the QPR game?
My words were, I fancy us to win this one. I never said we would. This Millwall game, I'm saying we will. Yeah, easy. Sign a new player. The hysteria subsides a little bit. We've got 10 days to build up for it. It'll be a bit tense in Elland Road because it always is when we're coming off the back of these runs of form. We'll score an early goal inside the first 15, 20 minutes and it'll be plain sailing from there.
We obviously, because the transfer window is open as we record, a little bit of a Twitter refresh to see what's happening. We're now being linked with a Brit, Assombalonga, which we weren't being linked with an hour ago. So there's news.
That's your Victor 2 plus 2, is that, isn't it? Equals.
I think so. It's
hopefully
come from
5.
It's like when we're linked with the guy from Everton as well, who they've been basically trying to get rid of for 3 years. Nias is called. He was on loan at Cardiff last year, scored no goals in 13 games, but they've just gone, who's definitely going to be available? Him. Let's not get him. Let's get someone who we actually want. Assombalonga was worth money at one point, wasn't he? Didn't Gary Monk pay £12 million for him?
£15 million.
Jesus Christ.
Whether he was worth that is an entirely different thing, or whether
which agent was he with?
Right, so your predictions for the Millwall game?
We're never going to win another football match.
What's your real prediction for the Millwall game?
We're not going to win this football match.
Moscow.
We'll win 4-0, Matthew Smith hat-trick, because we'll have signed him.
As well as doing this podcast, we do a weekly show with Phil Hay. It's called The Phil Hay Show, as part of our partnership with The Athletic. They now have 20 free football podcasts in their offering, along with The Phil Hay Show, which is one of them. And there's a new EFL podcast as well. So if you want to see what lies beyond the walls of LS11, then have a listen to those. And if you want to catch up with all Phil's writing on The Athletic, head to theathletic.co.uk/LeedsPod, and you can subscribe right there with 40% off. Let's pick our heroes and villains then from the last 7 days. Joy and despair. Plenty of despair across the last 7 days. Can we eke out a hero from somewhere? First, the Ken Bates Villainy Award. What's Ken been up to this week?
Wyoming Ken. I found his Facebook page. If you want to follow him yourself, Kenneth Bates City Council Ward 2 is the page to follow.
How many followers does it have?
I didn't notice, actually.
Okay, because we'll need to compare to how many followers it has next week to see if there has been a sudden surge of interest from a city in northern England.
You'll know you're on the right one because the background image on it is an American eagle thing with a flag in the background, and it's very Ken, actually. It says, as regulation grows, freedoms die.
Yeah, you know exactly what it looks like in your mind's eye. You don't need to see it.
I can smell the chlorinated chicken.
But there's been an automated messaging crisis in Wyoming because the council water rates have got some system in place that tells people if they've not paid, and they've basically messaged about 3,500 people telling them the water's going to get cut off because they've not paid. So Ken's had to issue a statement. He says,
"Yeah, it was related to our new contract with credit card services. Our new credit card provider also provides auxiliary services, automated phone calls to delinquent customers." Delinquent is a strange choice of words, but the city has been making delinquent phone calls for years. It's a strange thing to brag about. But until a few weeks ago, we were using a locally hosted system. We've used the new system several times now, and it appears in this case, we, city staff, made an error in how we upload the customer list. We'll come up with a plan. We have to re-notify the 607 customers who are genuinely delinquent.
Presumably, he'll be accessing the database to find out the genuinely delinquent customers.
Delinquent is a harsh word for people who've just failed to pay a water bill. It makes them sound like they're up to all sorts of filth.
Do they have direct debits in America? They should have direct debits in America, shouldn't they?
That sounds too much like regulation to me. Why are you trying to stop me owning a gun?
Strip it all out, right. What else have we got for villainy this week?
Speaking of guns... segueing beautifully. Raul Bravo, you remember him?
What are those guns saying? They're saying rat-a-tat-tat.
Raul Bravo, but he was a poor left-back, wasn't he? We've had a few bad left-backs over the years, but...
Always thought he was shady.
Tony Capaldi, what's he been up to? Not trying to kill anyone, that's for sure.
That we know about.
But Raul Bravo, yeah, is... former Spain international fullback Raul Bravo, once of Real Madrid, Leeds United, suspected of hiring a hitman to murder former Olympiacos teammate Darko Kovacevic. And he's previously been arrested on suspicion of corruption and money laundering.
Which you will remember was the same investigation that ensnared Samuel Saiz. So it's not actually as distant from us as it's already ex-Leeds star, once of Real Madrid and Leeds United.
He's not hired a hitman and it's been cut off before it happened either. He actually was shot at, this guy.
I mean, I've fallen out with my mates before when we've been playing football, but never to this extent.
Yeah. I mean, none of the bullets... actually hit him.
Yeah, Kovacevic said, I saw a man getting out of a car with a gun in his hand and coming towards me. I instinctively dived to the right and he fired at me. Then he ran, got into the car and disappeared.
Apparently, slotted it into the bottom left corner.
Apparently the gunmen fled the scene in a smart car, which was found torched in a neighbourhood on the outskirts of Athens.
I mean, Nippy, if you wanted to get away from a scene, let's imagine you were trying to shoot somebody, would you use a smart car? Because you're going to get in all the little nooks and crannies, can't you? Seem like the Bourne films.
I suppose it's maybe the equivalent of the Italian job using the minis, isn't it? So it's you've got to have something. I imagine downtown Athens has got some fairly. You need a turning circle and perhaps a efficient fuel gauge. Raul Bravo has denied this.
It's probably important that we say that.
Yes, he says a magazine in Serbia reported it, and I was stunned that it said I ordered the murder of Kovacevic. The only thing that matters to them is selling magazines, and saying I wanted to kill Darko sells more. It's a crazy story. It's nonsense.
So while we have nominated you for villainy there, Raul, we'd like to stress it's just a comedy device. Just to get the story to air.
Yeah, you don't... does he know our... I mean, he knows Leeds, doesn't he? So there could be... If there's a smart car coming around the loop road at 22 miles an hour looking for a plug socket...
What's that coming around the loop? Is it a smart car?
With Raul Bravo inside, yeah.
Right, let's move on to other people then. Who else?
Pat Bamford, for being as useless a hitman as the guys that Raul Bravo definitely didn't hire.
Who else?
Peter Banks... Banquez, yes. Is he also implicated in the Spanish match-fixing allegations? Well, it looked that way. I'm going to say it now. Peter Banquez was paid by Raul Bravo to fix that game for QPR. I'm legally sound saying that, aren't I?
I'm sure you are.
I think so, yeah. Whoever made the Leeds players do that video, the 49ers video?
It was nice to see Adam Forshaw, though.
Well,
even if it would have been nice to see him looking a little healthier.
I don't know, you know, have you seen, if you watch that video back, the first word of what each segment of each Leeds United player says, please give us some money. That's what it says.
I mean...
True story.
Calvin Phillips is obviously reading it. That's probably the low point of it.
That's what prompted that two-footed tackle.
You can see him looking down. And also, it's not clear to me, because they're all saying, we are one to go, let's make it faithful.
Yeah.
But there seems to be some confusion as to whether it's let's make it faithful.
Mm.
Let's make it faithful. Let's make it faithful.
It is confusing. Like
we are one to go. Let's make it faithful.
And I get the feeling that whoever at Leeds had to sort that out, probably the players are going back saying, how do we say, just fucking...
say the words.
Just it's say like, the words.
It's like the 49ers players going, marching on, together.
We're marching on too. Gether. Gether is over there. We're marching to it.
We need to give Calvin a nomination, sadly. He's one of our heroes, but in this case, he has strayed into the realms of villainy because of that tackle. And we're going to need him for the next three games. And we,
well, we
can't have
him. No. It was fucking dreadful. Although, I didn't realise he apparently injured Jeff Cameron last season. And as we discussed on Saturday, Jeff Cameron...
took it well.
Well, he's all about travel bans and... he's a big Trump supporter, if Wikipedia is to be believed. So I wonder if perhaps Calvin Phillips is striking a blow against that every time he sees him. Just thinks.
Should have a word with Wyoming Ken, I think, all this eagle and...
As regulations grow, freedoms die, and Jeff Cameron's leg breaks. But yeah, it was a dreadful tackle. I kind of hope the one optimistic spin I can put on that is let's play Alfie McCallman. Let's not force Stuart Dallas into being a central midfielder. Let's stick a young player in for a laugh. We're talking about freshening things up. I was thinking about this as well, part of our argument on Saturday about Jordan Stevens coming on, and we're about to nominate Jack Clark just for being a little twit. But last season we were all, you know, really excited whenever Jack Clark came on, like, oh, we've got this player from the 23, he's going to change everything. And then at the moment, we've got Jordan Stevens who's kind of playing that role, and it's gone a little bit like, oh, the fuck are we bringing him on? Why don't we have someone good?
I did notice on Jordan Stevens' Instagram account, he pictures of energy drinks. He's getting his deliveries, so he's going down the Jack Clark
route. He is the proto Jack Clark, isn't he? Jack Clark, yeah, he was saying he's looking forward to playing for an English manager.
He just seems very thick, doesn't he? Let's be honest on those clips that he puts out. I mean, he's a young lad.
And him and Eddie and Nketiah had a little back and forth on Instagram, didn't they? Which was very nice for you, because he happy to make my QPR debut today and top it off with a win. Also nice to see some familiar faces, and Eddie's love it.
Mm.
And Jack Clark gave him a love heart. Fuck off. How does that sound?
Sounds good. Derby can fuck off. Cheats.
Pick yourself a villain then from those people. Got to be Banks, hasn't it?
Yes.
Because I suppose Calvin probably wouldn't do that were it not for Banks.
I mean, I'm tempted to give it to Bamford, because if he'd scored the penalty, it's 1-1, everybody's a little cooler, we might have gone on and had the confidence to score another, and we did spend the first 15 minutes of the podcast basically blaming all our ills on him. So it feels like a little bit of a turn to then get down to villainy and go, oh no, he's all right. But give it to that referee.
What about then? Bamford, sort your shit out. Otherwise, it's you next. Banks, you're having it.
Oh, we're sending, right, we're sending Raul Bravo around.
Yeah. Let's pick a hero then. Well, we've only got one, so let's nominate the single person.
I mean, it was a real struggle. He was the only one I could think of. He only made it in last minute because Stoke beat West Brom. So
Michael O'Neill.
Yeah, Stoke looked pretty good last night. Means we're not as terminally fucked as we appeared. Or at least if we are, so are West Brom. So we can both drop out of the top two.
So Michael O'Neill is our Andy Hughes hero for this week.
I mean, is there anyone else?
No, there isn't, is there?
No.
We'll be back with the Phil Hay Show later on this week. You can get Mags Mugs merchandise and the half-season subscription on the website. It's all at thesquareball.net. We're also going to be doing the extra ball, looking back at January's past. A glorious lesson that's going to be as well. Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. We will speak to you in a bit. Ta-ra.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.